people's help might come in handy. It's a threat they're familiar with. I had a brush with the Sand People years earlier when you and I brought Padme here. They're formidable warriors. If something happens such that I can't continue my watch, well, let's not think about that, but it's nice to have options. Orin, again, he's very much a hail fellow well met. I like him. Quite the salesman, to be sure. And while he's obviously very proud of what he's built out here, he also seems a little self-conscious about it. Enough so that he tries to put on an air of humility. Even if it's just a sales ploy, I think it's a little endearing. Anakin could have used a bit of that. We were all impressed with what he could do. But he was impressed, too. And not in the least thankful for it. No. Not near the end. I have his lightsaber, you know. It's right here, sitting in my hands. Some nights, like this, I just sit and stare at it, wondering what I could have done to help him. I look, and I look, for answers. Then I put it away in the trunk and try to forget. It's impossible, of course. Maybe if he'd grown older, had been able to grow older, he'd have gotten some perspective. But that just wasn't to be. If only he'd listened to reason, hadn't forced me to do what I had to do, then I wouldn't be here now feeling like a... No. Good night, Qui-Gon. Part 2. The Killing Ground. Chapter 12. A large hovercraft left the compound heading to the east. There was a dark-haired human male driving it, not much more than a youngling. Ayark had seen this one before, and kept silent count as the vehicle made for the horizon. Once it had left, Ayark slipped back behind the dune and brought out the black rock. A smudged mark was made on the wrappings of the warrior's left arm, while another was rubbed off the tally on the right arm. Too many marks remained there, each one representing a settler present in the Oasis compound. Dozens arrived before the suns rose each morning, and the place remained in motion until well after night fell. Keeping count had tested Ayark's wits, and the total didn't even include the people who lived in the buildings. Only one of them mattered, of course. Ayark checked the stock of the blaster rifle where more counting could be found. 10 whittled notches. 10 days since the raid on the human farm had gone wrong. 10 days since the human woman had avoided death by Dewback by mystical means. The Sand People, hearing Ayark tell of her, had chosen to call her Enagrash, the Air Shaper. Ayark had not had to convince them of what her existence meant. Settlers so empowered would threaten them all. Ayark had known one person to have such powers, another Tusken, long since dead. That raider had come to join the Sand People willingly, an exceptionally rare thing, and had survived the welcome and trials that followed, which was almost unheard of. That warrior had the ability to shape the air, too, a fact that had certainly helped during the initiation. But that recruit had ultimately proved mortal, and that gave Ayark hope now. It meant an air shaper could die. This woman must, before she taught her skills to the other settlers. Ayark had found the air shaper's home easily. She'd made no efforts to conceal the path of her surviving Dewback. Settlers might have found tracking difficult on the rocky ground between the pitted area and the oasis, but they were not Tuskens. Ayark had crept up to the compound for a simple reconnaissance, only to realize the scope of the challenge. It was more than the sheer number of arrivals and departures. This place was the fortress of the Smiling One. It had to be. The war leader recognized from afar the vehicles the settlers had used in the defense of the farm. These and many more were stored in the huge garages. How large an army did the Smiling One have? Ayark hesitated to find out. Ayark had also seen the fuzzy-faced Eopi rider from earlier, but only once, 7 days ago, departing the compound quickly with his mount. The human's presence had been puzzling, as Ayark had never seen him arrive. He had to have traveled with the Jawas. That fact alone was offensive. Jawas were no better than the parasites the Sand People plucked off their banthas. They were the children of the Coward Sun, to be sure. The Eopi rider even dressed like one of them in his brown robe. Perhaps Hairy Face, that seemed a good name for the man, was a shaman to the Jawas, able to command the chattering things. The watchful raider had thought to follow the man as he journeyed toward the wastes, but the airshaper had appeared in the yard, calling vainly after Hairy Face, alongside her foolish, dewback-riding child. Ayark had realized something else that day. The airshaper also had a son. He was the one who had just driven away in the repulsor craft. The boy wasn't much older than Ayark's own son. Young Adin was back with the others today, going through the rites of adulthood. Ayark didn't want to be there. It would mean seeing what had become of the ritual. By tradition, the tested youth was to have hunted and killed a crate dragon, but crates were few in the pillars where the tribe hid, and so were eligible Tuscan youths. So the elders had decreed that some other creature might suffice, such as a logra. Still dangerous, but nothing like a crate. Ayark thought the choice was cowardly, and had said so. It described a clan so weakened that it could no longer keep to its principles. If a dean fell to a crate, fine. The child would have been adjudged a weakling and would have deserved death. It didn't matter that the boy was the last of Ayark's children. The warrior would have taken a blade to a dean personally, rather than see him live as a failure. But no one would know a dean's worthiness now. They would be killing womp rats next and pretending it was bravery. More movement at the garages. The Smiling One was out there again, babbling to the freakish thing that tended the vehicles. Ayark kept watching the place.